Hello, and welcome to On Boys, real talk about parenting, teaching, and reaching tomorrow's men, the podcast that explores and explains boy behavior. We're your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink and Janet Allison. Join us as we discuss some of the most compelling issues facing boys today. Our goal is to equip you with the information and support you need to help today's boys grow into healthy, happy men.
Dear listeners, you may have noticed that we are starting to run some ads on our podcast, and Jen and I have made the decision that we want to support and promote specific products that we believe in. And you can show us your support as you already do every day. We love you so much, but you can show your support for On Boys by supporting the products that we bring to you.
We won't share anything with you that we wouldn't use ourselves. Certainly, you are going to make the decisions that are best for your family, and what you need might not be exactly what I need. We are only going to share the products that have passed the Jen and Janet test.
That's right. So support On Boys and support the products that we share with you.
How's school going? Don't you hate that question? That is a fraught question in any year for most parents of boys. I didn't do any kind of scientific study, but I would guess in a regular year you ask that question and probably 8 out of 10 families will say, it's not going so great. Now we add in the pandemic and virtual learning and everything else. And so it almost seems a ridiculous and stupid and crazy question to ask because we are all in less than ideal education situations. Nobody is doing education their first choice way right now. That said, it is a big, huge part of our lives. And I know it is causing a lot of stress for a lot of families, a lot of parents, a lot of boys. And I want you to know, Janet and I want you to know, you do not have to settle for miserable. Things may be tough, but it doesn't have to be miserable. So today we have with us a special guest who is going to help us dig into this question of school and learning, education and family, and how we can make it better given the constraints that we face right now. Joining us is Sarah Mendonca of Learning Together Coaching and Consulting. Sarah has a PhD in educational leadership, and she is a homeschooling mom of 3, ages 17, 15, and 12. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm really glad to be here. You are absolutely right. This is the foremost topic on a lot of parents' minds, and it seems like every week, things are changing, the tide is shifting, comfort levels are fluctuating, and frustrations are rising. So I have enjoyed being able to support people that have come into my path, and I'm happy to be here and offer what I can.
So let me ask you this question first. It is, we all know the problems right now. Most of us are living it in our homes in some way, shape, or form. But do you know anybody who is not struggling with learning right now? Do you know any families who seem to have found a solution that they're like, you know what, this is working for us?
You know, there are certain people that I think are actually doing okay, but they're probably people who were already on a somewhat alternative path before this happened. So for example, families that have been homeschooling all the time, they're not really too affected other than the fact that the activities that their kids are involved in have been canceled. And so like everyone else, they're struggling with isolation. From a school standpoint, it's kind of status quo. People who were already doing online learning. In most states, there are existing online learning options that have been around for, you know, up to 10 years in some places or more. And so my kids had already been doing online classes and were comfortable with it already. And so it's been a relatively seamless transition from that perspective. And then I think when it comes to school districts, gosh, there's been so much variation in terms of how they've handled it. And I think the ones that have had the hardest time from my observations are the ones where school districts either were late in announcing plans and didn't give people enough, teachers especially, enough lead time, or their maybe they had plans, but the plans were not very sound. And so they had to shift, and that led to a lot of disruption. And I really feel like the disruption and the uncertainty is the most stressful part. I feel like everyone gets that things are different and it's no fun, but you know, we'll adapt. But what's really hard is when you try to gear yourself up for this thing, and then you have to switch to that thing, and then you have to switch again to the other thing. And every time it just requires so much emotional and mental energy for everyone.
Yeah. I have a client who started out, her son was in going to school and went to school for like 5 days, and then, oops, sorry, now we're back to remote learning. And that was for 2 weeks, and then they're back at school. And I'm really glad you spoke to the emotional toll that it takes. It's not just the logistics, it's the emotional toll. And the, you know, I think parents are trying to be, you know, stiff upper lip and yes, we can do this. And yet no one is doing this easily. Maybe not no one, there's probably someone who is, but it's really hard on the adults and for the adults to recognize how hard it is on the kids.
Yes. And I think that, well, I should say that when my kids did start taking classes online, it was our first venture into online learning was when my oldest was in ninth grade. And there was definitely a learning curve, not in terms of content, but just the learning management system, just figuring out how to navigate the platform, figuring out how to submit assignments in the right format, knowing where to find information and how to, you know, communicate with teachers when it's all, you know, through email and comments. And that it took a while. I mean, there were definitely some tears.
And he was in ninth
grade. Some of them were my son's and some of them were mine.
Yeah. And he was in ninth grade. I was recently visited my daughter and was doing my work at her kitchen table while she's in her office teaching special ed first through fifth grade online. If you can imagine, I think this is true for all of us. She really had to let go of the expectation of the teaching that she would be able to do in her 20-minute time slots with those kids, because most of the time was spent, number one, telling so-and-so to get off the video game and come to the screen to, you know, do the learning. And she's helpless of trying, you know, there's no ability to reach through the screen and say, hey, come on. And most of that 20 minutes is still, even a month in, to, you know, click this button, here's where this is, and that kind of management. So that's been really frustrating and challenging. And I think it speaks to, and I'd love your opinion of this place of letting go of academic expectations right now.
I was just going to say the same thing, as a matter of fact, because it reminds me of Mother Teresa and the story about how when she first got started with her ministry, she was teaching street children by writing in the dirt, you know, in an abandoned building. And I think about how we've made so many advances in education, and we've got all this great technology and all this great curriculum. But doesn't it really boil down to relationships? And can't we communicate so much just in conversation? You know, a lot of the homeschooling that we did, I love to use the term stealth homeschooling, because I loved when my kids were learning something really awesome and they had no idea, because it was fun and natural and just, you know, we were just doing something together, right? When kids are young, they crave relationship so much. And so I feel like, yes, letting go of some of the academic expectations and saying, you know, we're all living through an unprecedented crisis, a global crisis. And it's okay for us to relax a little bit about the standardized tests. And I'm glad so many education officials have had the wisdom and the compassion and the good sense to waive certain requirements, because I mean, what else are you going to do? There's just no way to hold people to the same standards. What worries me most and is the gap that I think is going to widen as a result of this, because we're seeing the pandemic pods where, you know, families with resources are hiring private teachers, even renting office space or houses for their kids and their friends to meet. Yet you've got other families where, you know, the parents are working crazy hours. They don't have the resources. They don't have the know-how. And what's going to happen to those kids?
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, that worry is hanging out there. And I feel it. You feel it, Janet. I know you do as well. And I can't do anything about that. And somehow I need to figure out how to relax with my own children. No wonder this is all so tough.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, everybody is scared. So many people I know are saying they're having trouble sleeping. You know, they're having trouble concentrating. I mean, it's a lot for everybody to process. And I think most kids are feeling it maybe more than the adults in their lives realize, just because they can't articulate it. I think they are definitely picking up on all this anxiety and uncertainty.
What are you seeing and hearing with your coaching clients, Janet?
Well, so I want to really dive into this, our kids, our boys especially. Number one, just the actual sitting at a computer screen and the attentiveness, we'll put it that way. But number two is the motivation, which I'm seeing in my clients that have kids in the more like 12, 13, 14 year old range. And basically, I mean, I have one mama whose son is refusing to do school. And he's playing video games all day long. And she feels right now helpless to get him to take school even a little bit seriously. And so what do you suggest for number one, like how to make it more palatable to just even be at the screen? But number two, how to get those boys who are just have like put their foot down, I'm not doing this, to participate? At some level, at any level.
Yeah, that is a very big question. And I feel like it goes to some underlying causes. I think that in my family, we've emphasized the importance of learning and the joy of learning from day one. And so I don't have to convince my kids of the importance of learning because they get it and they want to learn. And I'm so thankful for that, you know, even if they, it's not that they aren't sometimes, you know, lazy or procrastinate like every kid, but at least we're not arguing about the value or importance of learning, right? But I think that there are kids who don't get that, and that's hard. You know, how do you convince them, especially once they're at that age where what mom or dad says doesn't carry as much weight as it used to. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it comes down to motivation too. I mean, it's related, but what are their goals? Do they realize what the end game is? You know, do they realize that the choices they're making today have consequences for their life later on?
I think that's where actually a lot of boys in that age range are struggling right now, because my two that are in college, so they're older than that, but the two that are in college are really struggling with, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
The economy is already tanked. It's probably going to get worse before it gets better. My oldest is finishing up a degree in music business as the entertainment industry is, you know, like on hold and crashing. He doesn't know if he'll have a job. My 20-year-old, you know, he's sort of the same thing. So in some ways, this, for some of our boys anyway, I don't want to speak for every situation, but for some of our boys, I think some of this lack of motivation is them going, is there any hope? Why am I doing this? What is the point? And my gut is that if that, you have to talk about some of this with them. You have to try and untangle some of it. And there may also be an underlying, you know, depression and anxiety going on as well. I know I'm struggling with that. You mm-hmm. take underlying depression and anxiety, and then you add in all this global uncertainty. It's not exactly a recipe for productivity and motivation.
We're going to pause for a moment for a message from High Health, one of our sponsors. Did you know that 93% of kids don't eat enough fruits and vegetables? You may have one of those children like my niece who ate only macaroni and cheese for about 6 of her formative years. Many kids kind of fixate on one particular food, and you are tearing your hair out, dear listeners, trying to make sure that they have a balanced diet. I will say from the benefit of the years, my niece now is a grown woman and has 2 healthy kids, so that mac and cheese sustained her. But our kids need more nutrition than we are able to give them in their regular diet.
Which is why so many of us look to vitamins to fill those gaps. And so many of us, myself included, have been dissatisfied with what we find on the shelves. We recently connected with a new-to-us company called Hiya Health, and they have chewable vitamins for kids that are non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gluten-free, nut-free, all of that. And they fill in the gaps in modern children's diets in a chewable vitamin that kids love. My guys liked it, and my guys are kind of picky.
Yeah, so they've been kid tested by your guys, by your nieces and nephews. So we feel, and we've tested them too, we've tasted them, and we believe in this product. This is a pediatrician approved, super powered, chewable vitamin. It was created by 2 dads that were tired of children's vitamins that actually cause more problems than they solve. So with these vitamins, with Hiya Health, you know that you're getting 0 sugar and 0 gummy junk, and yet it tastes great and it's perfect for picky eaters.
We've worked with Hiya Health and we have an exclusive offer for you. If you go to Hiya Health and use the ONBOYS code at checkout, you can get 50% off your first order. Go to Hiya Health, HIYAHEALTH.com and enter ONBOYS to get that 50% off. The discount will be applied at the checkout.
So get full body nourishment so that your boys can grow into healthy adults. That's HiyaHealth.com/ONBOYS. Now back to our conversation with Sarah Mendonca.
One of the things that I've been talking to my kids a lot about and thinking about myself is that now is a time for divergent thinking. Now is a time for new and innovative solutions. The world is changing, probably permanently. And I can't think of a single field or domain that hasn't been affected by this. And so, yes, that's a crisis, but there's also a lot of opportunity there. And I have been paying close attention to all of the people and organizations that have been quick to say, okay, we got to find a new way to do things. And so I do think that there's a lot of opportunity for people who can be creative and adaptive and responsive. And so I think for boys or girls, tapping into their passions and their strengths and helping them to see possibilities for how they can earn money in a way that is related to something that they love. That can take so many different forms, but clearly everything is shifting to online right now. And so there are ways that they can share with the world about the things that they really love and enjoy and find interesting. So whether it's blogging or podcasting or a YouTube channel, you know, or just building a website, learning how to make apps. You know, there's, I think getting them excited about a project is probably the thing that has the most potential to wake them up.
In some ways, we all have a bit of an advantage coming to this conversation in that we all have personal years of experience with sort of outside the traditional realm of education thinking. Janet, you know, you spent years in Waldorf education, and Sarah and I both homeschooled for years. And if anything causes you to, you know, question everything that you thought you knew about education and learning, homeschooling is one of those things. So, you know, for somebody who's maybe not there yet, Sarah, what would your advice be for somebody who they're realizing this current option is not working? And yet, you know, it's terrifying to potentially step away from it. It seems easier to fight with your son to sit at the computer because that's all you know for an option right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing I try to tell a lot of families is that there are options, and it's scary. Change is scary. But I mean, none of us are getting out of 2020 without coping with change. So,
well said, Sarah.
So, you know, I think that it depends a little bit on the age of the child, because, you know, for elementary schoolers, I admire public school teachers tremendously, and I know they do a lot of important things. That said, I feel like a kid, most kids with caring parents, could probably spend half a year out of school, come back, and not be horribly behind, especially this year. Older kids, it's different, you know, with high school, taking time out of school, you know, can affect, you know, when they start college. But, you know,
again, it's affecting everybody right now.
Yeah, as you pointed out, I mean, who knows what they're going to do after college anyway? And so it's definitely a time to take a step back and look at options, you know, once again, with an open mind, and say, you know, how can we relieve the stress and the tension right now? And how can we do things that are really going to be good for us? So, you know, I think that I feel the greatest sympathy, I think, for parents whose kids are being expected to do synchronous learning virtually all day, because of all the options, I feel like that might possibly be the worst.
educational jargon here, define synchronous learning for people that aren't familiar with the term.
Some schools are back to in-person and they're trying to follow guidelines, and that's, you know, not the same thing as in person without masks and social distancing, but at least it's in person. It's the closest approximation to what we had pre-pandemic. Then you've got hybrid programs where they're sometimes in person and they're sometimes at home. And so you've got a little bit of that balance. You're able to distance and observe the guidelines, but you also have a little bit of work to do at home. Then you've got the virtual programs that are either asynchronous or synchronous. So asynchronous is they can log in and do the work at their convenience. So if they want to sleep in, as long as they get the work done and turn it in by the deadline, that's fine. Synchronous, they have to sit in front of the computer while the teacher is live all day. And so they can't move around. They can't, you know, they're supposed to have their camera on. It's exhausting for the kids. I mean, none of us likes being in meetings all day long. And certainly when they're online meetings, you don't get those same, you know, good feelings that you get when you're in person with people. So it's stressful for them. And I have told, you know, some families that, you know, complain about how hard that is for their kids to sit still. I mean, oh my gosh, like an 8-year-old boy asking them to sit in front of a computer screen all day like that, and be attentive in that setting. I've said to them, you know, think about how much stress this is causing you, and think about whether one of the alternatives that's available to you might be better from a physical health, emotional health, mental health, and even academic standpoint.
Yeah, we do not want to make that 8-year-old boy hate learning at age 8.
And so, you know, Jen and I talk often about you've got to give him opportunities to move his body before the expectation is that he will sit in front of a screen, if he has an opportunity to be standing rather than sitting. But really and truly, for an 8-year-old boy, the expectation of even 20 minutes of attentiveness is max, maximum.
Yeah. And a lot of times I think too about, okay, when and how are kids the most receptive to new information, right? And if you're talking at them all day on a screen, it's just gonna ricochet right off, right? But you know, if they are getting a chance to play outside and they have, you know, good balance in their lives, you could spend half an hour reading a book to them and it might all absorb completely and stick, you know? So I think that's a piece that a lot of people might not be thinking about right now, is the quality versus quantity in terms of the virtual learning.
Yeah. And that this is that opportunity to learn life skills. It is that stealth homeschooling. They don't know they're being schooled. But again, I'd have to just pause and acknowledge those parents out there who don't have the opportunity to be home with their kids. And that's that, you know, that gap that you talked about of just the widening social fabric is, there's kids that parents have to be working. Right. And I want to reassure those parents, you know, a lot can happen in the time between when the workday closes and bedtime. And so not sweating the daily school, quote unquote, schedule.
And it doesn't all have to be academic, educational during that time. There's so much that you can do together that is both enjoyable and has, you know, learning and curiosity and skills building built into it. You know, some of my favorite memories of our homeschooling years are like watching a documentary that was on PBS that we were just all fascinated in. Well, there's science, there's geography, there's all kinds of learning, but we're watching it together because we're interested in it. Or, you know, going to a nature park for a hike, and it's little kids do this much more than the teenagers, but even the teenagers will do it. You know, they start discovering things and exploring things. And then that leads into, you know, what kind of rock is this? There's all of that natural, innate learning. And I think that we can take some of the stress, a lot of the stress off ourselves and our kids by just leaning into these experiences as being with our children and parenting without worrying too much about, are they learning something from this?
Yeah, exactly. And I think too that, you know, for me, I'm assuming that you two also came from homes where our parents genuinely enjoyed learning new things and modeled curiosity and enthusiasm for learning. And so that, you know, that has stuck with us and made us excited about teaching and being lifelong learners too. And I think too about how attitudes towards education and learning are passed on differently in other families. And so if a child grows up with anxiety and negative associations about school, and then they become a parent and they're not really able to model that same joy and enthusiasm for learning because they've got all of this trauma associated mm-hmm. with their education. And so it's hard for kids to break out of that cycle because they're not growing up with those same models.
Going to be really interesting to see what happens 20 years from now when these kids are the parents.
Yeah. Yep. The world has shifted on its axis, hasn't it? Sarah, I'm curious what you would say to the teachers out there, the teachers that are, you know, probably parenting as well. But do you have a little pep talk for the teachers who are trying to do also an impossible task?
Oh my gosh, I have so much admiration and appreciation for them and sympathy because I'm friends with quite a few teachers and they are being pushed to their absolute limits right now. Not only are they being asked to teach in sometimes two or three different formats, you know, like a social studies teacher that I'm friends with in Oregon was talking about how she's got you know, the virtual synchronous and the virtual asynchronous and the in-person. And it's just like, you know, it's crazy because she's having to do essentially three different lesson plans every day. And she's got a young child too. Her husband's a teacher as well. So they are under so much stress. They're exhausted, but then they've got to help their kids with their schoolwork on top of everything. So it does feel like, you know, I hear a lot of them saying this isn't sustainable, you know. I hear a lot of them saying we're going to lose a lot of teachers by the end of this year because they're not going to be able to.
I feel like somebody just needs to come out and say, okay, this is ridiculous. This is stupid. We can't stop. Do this. Yeah. Everybody stop. Go bake some cookies.
Yeah, there you go. Go
we make have cookies. Been baking a lot of cookies lately, I will say.
Like, it is it to expect teachers to do this. It's inhuman, inhumane to expect parents to do this. It's inhuman. We can't keep doing this.
And I admire educators so much, though, for really trying because they don't want kids to fall behind. Yeah. And I know how hard they're trying. I've been speaking with educational leaders where we live now, and they're talking about how one of the big problems they're having is with some students just not showing up at all for the online stuff. And so then they try to figure out what's going wrong. And they try to, you know, do home visits to check in with families. And some of the families are not very appreciative of those home visits. And so you wonder, like, what are those kids doing? What is this year of their life going to be? Are they in homes where parents are saying, well, let's just read a lot of books and play some educational games and let's get our exercise every day, or not?
More likely playing video games all day.
And so I think that what's keeping the teachers going is they're worried about the kids in the unstable homes where school is their safe place and they can't go right now.
Yeah. So let me ask you two questions. There are so many opportunities and resources available. You know, the internet exists and there's all these different educational websites and programs and, you know, so much. It can be very difficult, though, to sort through and figure out, you know, what are the options and alternatives available to me in my community? So question one is, you know, how can a family kind of find and explore options for themselves? And then question two is, if a family has time, has resources, what can we be doing to help, you know, facilitate learning and support of kids who might not have that same support at home?
Yeah, great questions. So homeschoolers tend to be very resourceful, and there are Facebook groups of homeschoolers in every state and in most cities. So I recommend joining one of those groups, even if you're not a homeschooler. Hopefully they'll let you in. And then just scan the posts there because you'll see tons and tons of great information. There are Facebook groups about teaching and learning of all different kinds of subjects. So if there's a subject in particular, you know, whether you're looking for math resources or social studies resources, those groups are great in terms of being able to put a request out there and then lots of people, you know, will respond. And it can be a very efficient way to get the information you're looking for. As far as in the community, I'll say that where we are now, the YMCAs are and the United Way both are the ones that are kind of at the forefront of trying to meet needs of families that need help. They're developing what they're calling student support centers here, where they're specifically for elementary schoolers whose parents have to work, and they're following the health guidelines, but they've got, you know, staff supervising. They've got time for kids to do schoolwork and also time for them to get exercise in an appropriate space. They're just trying really hard to connect families with all of the local agencies that have helped to give. Everybody's, you know, trying to step it up. All the agencies that help families are trying to step it up right now. I suggest if you want to help in your community, you know, contact the YMCA. They'll know what's going on. Contact the United Way. They'll know what's going on.
Boys and Girls Clubs is another place. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even your local food bank often will have connections to other agencies. And certainly, I mean, Need for Food is great as well, but that can be another place to start your search.
Yeah. And I think too, going back to the subject of helping our boys, making them aware of opportunities for them to help in the community could do wonders for their motivation and attitude. The YMCA here has a youth volunteer corps, and they've always got projects that are, you know, they post pictures, the kids are in masks, but they're putting together baskets for the homeless shelter, or they're, you know, doing a gardening project, or, you know, it really boosts their self-esteem to feel like they are being useful.
Big exclamation point right there. That is such an important part of what is possible now. And it could be even as simple as, I mean, it's fall here in Portland, the leaves are falling, and it could be as simple as, hey, let's go around and clean out the gutters so that the rain can flow to the sewer, and or let's rake the neighbor's leaves and pick up sticks or whatever. That there is that opportunity to be outside, wear your mask, be outside, be working, be serving someone else in just in your local neighborhood. So it takes a little creativity, it takes some energy, but and it might take the, you know, getting over the hurdle of, yeah, we are doing this. So, you know, this, get your boots on, let's go, that resistance. But once you're out, you know, then it's the air and the sun, and it feels so good, or the rain. It feels good to be helping someone else.
It does. And I think even if, you know, take a kid who you can't interest in anything except video games, they could do a fundraiser video game tournament. They could do a fundraiser video game stream. Raise money for a cause that they care about, and develop, you know, a graphic for promoting it. Then they can be learning skills, communication skills, design skills, business skills, while still doing something that they love, but for a good cause.
Great idea.
That was brilliant. That's a brilliant idea. And those are the kinds of wins and what's possible when you give yourself a moment to back off from all the things that aren't working, and then all the shoulds. Just give yourself some space and let your brain get creative and play around with ideas.
So Sarah, oh my gosh, this has been such a helpful conversation. I think part of it is just the reassurance that, listeners, you're not alone. We're all struggling with this from all aspects, from, you know, homeschoolers to school districts to teachers to kids. And to, you know, hear you say, you're an expert in the field, to hear you say, it's okay, take a pause, deep breathe, go make cookies, it's going to be okay. That's just makes me feel so good to just hear that reassurance. And so where can people find you?
I have a Facebook page. It's called Learning Together Coaching. People can message me there. I would love to talk to anybody who would like to brainstorm about solutions for their family.
Nice. Thank you so much for being with us. And thank you for doing the work that you do.
Thanks for inviting me. This was a real treat.
Thanks for joining us. We are Jennifer L.W. Fink and Janet Allison, and we are here to support you in parenting and teaching tomorrow's men.